Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. Before we get to my very, very special guest, I'm so excited about my guest this week. Couple of things. As always, follow me on social media at Paul Mercurio. Got posting a lot of fun stuff there several times a day, all the platforms, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and anything else that gets invented in the next 10 minutes, I'll be on. That's at Paul Mercurio. Before we get to my guest, so I try not to confront people all the time when they act like jerks. My wife is trying to get me to do less of it, especially living in New York City, because she says you're going to get shot talking to the wrong person. But I think I'm justified. I'm in a cab. I get in the cab. We start to drive away. All of a sudden, the cab driver stops at a corner that he's not supposed to stop at, rolls his window down, and pulls the car up alongside the curb. And up from the front seat emerges his hand filled with orange rinds, like a case worth of orange rinds. He's eaten a lot of oranges for whatever reason. Maybe he had scurvy. I don't know. He leans over and he makes this like half-assed attempt to take all the orange rinds. Instead of getting out of the car, takes all the orange rinds and tries to throw them through the passenger side window into a garbage can on the sidewalk 50 feet away. And he misses completely because he's not in the NBA. He's 5'6". He's like 60 pounds overweight. He's driving a cab. I don't think he's a power forward for the Utah Jazz. Okay. And he knew he did something wrong because the minute he did it, he looked at me. You know, like when a kid does something wrong, they look at you with that look like, I know you saw me do this, but we're just going to not say anything about it. That was the look because he went like this. He was like this little like squinty eyed thing in the back into the rearview mirror, looking at me in the back seat like hee-hee, with a little like creepy laugh like hee-hee. And he starts to drive away. Now, I know I should just leave it, but I can't. So I say, wait. He goes, what? I go, you can't throw your garbage in the streets. He goes, what? I go, you can't throw your garbage in the streets. He goes, but it's a big city. I go, it doesn't matter. It's still a community and a place in which we live. He goes, but it's, you know, what difference does it make? Look at all the people, there's garbage. I go, it doesn't matter. You got to get out and pick out your garbage. And then I snap. He goes, but it's a big city. I go, I understand it's a big city, but we're still human beings to each other. And I don't want to be walking down the street and stepping on your orange rinds. And you get, if you're going to have that attitude, why not just say, hey, it's Waffle Wednesday. And every one Wednesday, you make waffles and you just drive down the street and you throw them into the street for no reason at all. And I'm ranting. I go, get out of the cab and pick up your garbage. Puts the car in drive, turns into like a pouty 12-year-old boy. Gets out of the cab, walks around, picks up all the garbage, all the orange rinds, throws it into the garbage can, gets back into the cab, get to the destination. Cab fare's $12.50. You know what I give him? $12.50. Why? Because I believe a tip should mean something. And I don't think he deserved a tip for his behavior. And I pay him the money. He goes, what, no tip? And he gives my face. He goes, no tip? I go, no. He goes, why? I go, because you're just going to buy oranges with it. That's why. So if New York seems a little cleaner to you when you go, you can thank me. All right. My guest this week, rock legend Joe Walsh of the Eagles, James Gang. Really cool conversation with him about his creative process, his history in music, going from working in bands to solo, back to bands, his issues with alcohol and drugs, just a very cool, wide-ranging conversation. But the part that gave me real goosebumps is him talking about how he writes. This is why I do my podcast. I love to talk about great artists, about their process, and here it is, the great Joe Walsh. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is a very special edition. A legend is on my show. I'm going to just put it that way. Legendary musician, songwriter. He's had an incredible solo career. He's such as his Rocky Mount Way, which I've listened to in my mother's Oldsmobile, very drunk and otherwise in altered states. Life's been good all night long. He's formed and been part of some of the most amazing rock bands, James Gang, Barnstorm, of course, member of the Eagles. And he gives back. He does a lot of work for veterans causes and over the years. And he's founded Vets Aid, an organization that raises funds for vets. And it's got a really killer concert coming up at the Nationwide Arena in Columbus, Ohio, November 13th. We've run out of time because your intro is so long. Thanks for being on the show, Joe Walsh.
No, okay. Just... so
yeah. Great to have you, man.
It's great to be here. Nice to sit down with you. I watched you at work during last week And you got a tough assignment, I got to tell you. Whipping it into shape. But I thought you did a great job. And we didn't get a chance to visit. So I'm glad to be on your podcast. And now I've used all the rest of the time. So...
thanks, man. Yeah, we met briefly at the Late Show, and you sat in for the week, and we're amazing. And a lot has to happen at the beginning of that show to kind of that help them understand what has to happen as an audience and get them into the right frame of mind. So that means a lot. Thank you. I appreciate it. Let's talk about this concert that's coming up, and then we'll jump into some other stuff. But this is quite the lineup, and it's Ohio based. I mean, you're an Ohio guy, and you brought in Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails and the Black Keys and Dave Grohl. And obviously that was intentional, but you want to get back to your roots, I take it, being with the James Gang's reuniting. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that kind of, that was always in the back of my mind, but we are, you know, there's a lot of music that has come out of Ohio. We're not San Francisco or one of the Motor City, but we're pretty good. And this is gonna be our first live one again for 2 years. We had to go virtual because everybody did. And now we know all about that. It's amazing how your knowledge and your awareness comes out of stuff that you're kind of forced into doing. You don't have a choice.
Exactly.
You have to do it.
Exactly. Did anything good come out of that for you in terms of on a personal level or professionally or performing or anything like that?
Well, yeah, the COVID experience, you know, I always thought, oh man, sometime I gotta just take a long time off and get away from it and have a look at everything. And careful what you pray for. Because what I do is shut down for a year, and I spend most of the time watching TV and eating chocolate ice cream rather than get into a heavy, intellectual look at the world. It was an amazing thing to be a part of, watching the world change. And we are different, and it has changed. I'm 74, you know, and a lot of stuff that I thought would never change has.
Such as?
Well, the record business, which was foundational for my generation, is gone. And I never thought about that. But back to the COVID, I got a chance to really look at myself, not the rock star, you know, because he had to go away for a year. But I got a chance to look at myself and spend time with myself and find out some stuff that was triggering me into different emotions. In my life experience, I have learned that when your emotions own you, you got to be really careful.
Yeah, there can be a lot of collateral damage.
To find all that stuff that triggers that loss of focus and your emotions take over, so you become somebody you're not. I got a chance to look at all that.
Were you triggered by, you were at Kent State when that horrible tragedy happened, and that era, and this era feels like that, only worse, frankly. And were you triggered by, you said you watched TV and it prompted me to think, because I was watching the news and getting angry and frustrated, not just about COVID, but, you know, all this, you know, all the other stuff going on in politics and how divisive we are as a country. Did you find, what was triggering for you? Was it sort of stuff coming out of that, or was it just stuff that you had sort of buried that you weren't dealing with, or because you were busy being a rock star?
The stuff that really got me upset was all the gun violence that has just, without us, and I don't know, us, ideally that would be Congress, but without us doing anything about it, and the racial stuff that's showing up again. I thought we had a good chance of moving forward with all that stuff. But when, you know, the black people started dying when they didn't have to, under the thing of law and order, which wasn't really there. And that stuff was starting to get me upset. And then Seattle went crazy. And bordered an area of itself in, and all of that. And all this expressions of emotions, without thinking about it, started to show up all over the place.
Yeah.
And that gets me going. And I saw in Detroit, the governor, I think the governor or the mayor of Detroit expressed a way to deal with it all of calling out the National Guard. And that's exactly what happened in Ohio. And it is a dysfunctional chain of command and innocence and bumping into something that has never really happened before, and it mutates.
Yes.
It mutates. And I was just screaming, Kent State, because you can't call in the National Guard in a civil unrest of stuff that really needs to be looked at. To make it go away. And that got me going.
It was almost like triggering a flashback. I mean, you had said at one point, that the Kent State, what happened at Kent State affected you profoundly, probably permanently and for a long, long time.
All of us.
Yeah.
We're and, still around.
Yeah. You said I found, you know, what you talked about, sort of what you're talking about is sort of like there is a level of hate and racism that got sort of that was always there, I guess, that I didn't realize and kind of got unearthed. And yeah, that's what scared me. And now I'm scared that there's something else or more that still hasn't been unearthed. Like, I don't know how deep down this well we're going to go. Right. That's what scares me.
Yeah, I didn't know all that extremism was really there until President Trump dug it up and it was like his little weed garden, and he watered it and it sprouted.
Yeah.
And holy smokes, all of a sudden seemed like we were going backwards. Yeah. So that's been getting me unserene, shall we say.
Right.
That screws up a day of nice serenity.
Yeah.
Just to go there.
I know.
Because it's got you.
Yeah.
You're running around swearing and...
Yeah. And you become...
Mad at the television.
Right. And you become... it's if you're the only way it doesn't get you is if you're indifferent to life and what's going on and to other people and your fellow man. And then that's, I think, being even in an even worse place. Right. So yeah. Like, I appreciate the passion, but it can be self-destructive. I mean, my wife will sit and we'll watch TV and we both just get so worked up, and it's like, we have to take a breath and then change the channel or just not read the paper for a day because it's just so, do you find that that kind of emotion blocks you as a creator, as a writer, as a performer? Like, are you able to channel that into your work?
It doesn't really block you. It just eats up your time.
Right.
So all of a sudden, you know, you watch the news and it's, oh God, it's time to go to bed again.
Right.
You know, I meant to get down and play guitar.
Right.
But I had all these emails, right, you know, and all these phone calls and stuff. We move along from Kent State, but this 21st century, the digital age, holy smokes, everybody's just on their phone. And see, that's all time that we eat up, not here. It's like our body's sitting in a chair waiting for our minds to come back. Basically.
Exactly.
Because you know, we're in there.
Right.
And
right.
That's all, I mean, that for me used to be, I'd go play guitar. And for no reason, not to practice.
You just...
Just to go play guitar.
Get it out of you. Yeah.
And that, playing guitar, not because you have to, not to practice scales and stuff, but just playing guitar, that's where the creative stuff comes from.
Is that your process? Because I'm not a musician and I am fascinated. I can write words and then convert them into funny stories and make people laugh. But the idea of how you hear all those sounds, then put them together, then put beautiful words to them. And I think you're a true artist, because what's blown me away about your career is that you've moved so effortlessly, it looks like, from band to solo to band, collaborating with different people. And that, and like, I there's like four Joe Walshes, and I think you're all of these people, but you're the great garage band, bluesy rock and roll, the James Gang, Rocky Mountain Way. You're the lighthearted playfulness of Life's Been Good. You're the heartfelt, beautiful stuff of Barnstorm. And then you're the refined guitarist of, you know, the Eagles, and that's great too. But like, I think we're all multiple personalities, but you found a way as an artist to put all that out there. How have you been able to do that? Because I think you're all of those people, right?
Well, yeah, you know, you're right. Glenn Frey said Joe Walsh is a bunch of really nice guys. And I always loved him for that. Yeah. You know, I'm blessed because I'm here. I made it. I've been rich a couple of times and famous a couple of times. And I'm still here. And a lot of my buddies aren't. They crashed and burned.
Keith Moon being one of them. I know.
Yeah, and Baluch.
Baluch was
a great buddy, and a whole bunch of other people. And I'm still here, but the creative process, the way I'm wired is all I can say. Everybody's wired different and everybody's kind of good at something. Some of us use the side of our brain that's creative, and some of us use our side of a brain that adds and subtracts.
Right, right.
Shall we say.
Right, yeah, I got you.
But so, you know what I do is I like to get in a room with no phones and nobody telling me I have to do this or that or return calls or what about this or what about that. I like to get in a room where it's really quiet. And I don't play music. I just get in a room and be me. Sometimes I'll play guitar. But when it's really quiet, and I listen to that.
You mean you listening to what's going on in yourself, in your how you're feeling emotionally, mentally, what's going on inside of you?
No. I don't get into me. I just try and be. It's kind of like meditating. I just try and be there and be aware of how quiet it is. And sometimes when it's really quiet, that can get really loud.
I know that feeling in the middle of the night. Yeah.
And inside that is when, without trying to, I hear things that go like this. I hear music.
So will it, do you?
I hear a space that contained music, and it's hard for me to say it, but if there was a melody, I hear where that would be. And so, okay, so then I play guitar for a while and write some, just play around that and come up with some chords around where that would be. And then that starts to blossom, right. You know?
Right.
And so then I get some chords that work good together. And that's good. And so I know where the melody would be. And then I think, well, now the melody needs words. If there were words, you know, where would they be? And I just build up this thing inside this quiet place. And it's a birth. It's like a pain. Sometimes it's painful.
I got to tell you.
I get going and I get some chords at work and I make sure that something I haven't already written and doesn't already exist.
Right.
It's somebody else's song. And if I can get those checked off, then that's a start.
Does your mood when you walk into that room, do you cleanse yourself of any mood that you're in, either consciously or subconsciously, before you walk into them? For example, I write best comedy when I'm a little bit angry and pissed off because I find strong point of view in that moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a songwriter and a musician, are you trying to sort of just get yourself into just a peaceful state so that the muse can come to you? Or do you find that the mood you're in when you walk into that room and get quiet informs that melody and that birth?
Okay, yeah. Now, the first thing you said, yeah, I don't attach any mood in the very beginning of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that mood is important. And when I just have this concept of a space that I'm trying to fill, right? Then I'll try moods on it. And I'll be in a really good mood. And this might not be at the same time, but when I revisit it, I'll get out the guitar and play aggressive lead guitar for a while.
I was going to ask you about that, about when you play. How you play is how you play. But do you manipulate the instrument differently if, say, that night you're not in a great mood? If you're in a bad mood, if that song sounds a little different. And versus, you know, being in a really bad mood and it drives it. You're in a good mood. And you're, do you play differently based on your mood?
Yeah. And I play different things. Now, if I play that aggressive lead guitar and what do they call that? There's a word, I'll come back to it. But if some of that works in this thing that I'm imagining that could be a piece of music, great. Maybe I'll put the guitar down and maybe I'll go over and play piano.
Because
maybe it's a piano song. And maybe if I'm calm, and that's a whole different thing, you know. I can play what I hear, but I'm not I have to be careful with this word. I'm not a pianist. But sometimes to make this song real, I'll sit down at the piano and wow, a big piece of it will get filled in. That goes there, that goes there. Okay, now it's in this key. And maybe that's major, maybe it's minor. Minor is sad, reflective. And I try stuff out.
Now, will that piano piece stay as a piano piece in the song, or would it necessarily become a guitar piece or sax or something?
No, the piano piece may not be piano. It may be just keyboards, is all I'll say.
Got it.
You know, but it's a different world of filling in, you know, finding the pieces to a jigsaw puzzle. And that is all trying to stay as far away from reality as I can.
Interesting.
Because
it becomes a distraction.
Well.
Yeah.
And you're done.
Yeah.
Somebody's
phone rings.
On, yeah. Somebody's online too.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, it's funny. Tom Fontana, great writer, created Oz. He writes around 5 o'clock in the morning, usually for 3 hours. He comes out of a dream state. He's still half asleep. And he says it's his most fertile time of the day. And then he's.
I agree. And more people should know that, because once you're up, in the 21st century, in the digital age, you're doing that.
Yeah.
But I agree. I've been getting up at night, and my wife's upset. She's not upset, concerned. Can't you sleep? Well, yeah. I can, but, you know, that's when that place is.
Yeah,
that's,
and you can't ignore it. You can't ignore it. It's a special place, and it's not easy to get there. You can't ignore it.
Yeah, and if that's 5 a.m. or 4 a.m., that so be it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great place. Authors have always said that. When they had typewriters, they just get up and they just type 3 or 4 or 5 pages.
Right.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Sometimes you gotta get it out. How is it going for you getting ready for this concert, and you're prepping with the James Gang again, which everybody's really excited about? And how's the training going for that? I'm assuming you guys are, you know, getting your legs underneath each other, under yourselves, and all that. How's that going?
Yeah, thanks for changing the focus. When we decided to do Vets Aid this year and make it a live concert, we always had Ohio as one of the states that was a candidate for a Vets Aid concert. There's a bunch of other states. San Diego's a huge military complex down there with the Marine base and SEAL training and all that, you know. So that's another one. And there's areas with huge amounts of veterans. So we decided on Ohio. And we checked out the cities, and Columbus seemed really excited about it. The city fathers of Columbus.
Yeah.
The mayor, the city, you know? And in that Columbus area, I mean, that's Cleveland, Youngstown, Cincinnati, Indiana's right next door, you know?
Right. It's a very fertile place. And I mean, you've got a lot of people. You've got the breed, you know, people on your lineup are from Cleveland and Akron, the Black Keys. So like, I love this sort of Ohio theme. And I work in Columbus. There's a big comedy club there called the Funny Bone. And I work there and I love the town and love the people. So did you plan for a while to sort of bring the James Gang back together for this, or was that just
the it was always in my mind. I didn't know if it was a good idea or not.
Of course it's a good idea.
Well,
what are you, crazy?
Yeah, it's turning into a good idea. Yeah. so yeah. And we checked out, we asked people who are from Ohio, and everybody said, yeah. Everybody said, yeah, I'll do it. And when we had, you know, enough for a show, then it starts to become real. In the meantime, Taylor Hawkins passed away.
Yep.
The drummer of the Foo Fighters. And he was a great guy. He knew a lot of people and was friends with a lot of people. It's amazing how many people he had hung out with and got to and made music with. And that came out of left field. I didn't see that one coming.
You're going to be honoring him. And
Dave decided to have the Foo Fighters put together a show, two shows, for benefit causes, one in London and one in Los Angeles. And Taylor Hawkins' very favorite, number one band in the whole world was the James Gang. He was our biggest fan we've ever had. And he was on me all the time. When are you going to get the band back together? Come on, man. You can fight us, you know. You've got to do it.
Is it a lot of work to get a band back together? Or is it, to me, as an outsider looking in, it seems like, okay, we'll get together, we'll kind of dust off the cobwebs, boom, 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 bang, bang, bang. Or,
well, yeah, but I have some demons in there.
Which is what? The sort of.
Well, I was young. I was in my 20s. I was immortal. I was using substances and alcohol to write, to perform. That was part of the deal. We all did.
Right, but when you say you had some demons there, why does that make it difficult to come back together now? You're all...
I put on the album Live at Carnegie Hall. And, oh my God, I am so intense. I'm going Mach 2. I can't play that fast.
So it's a little PTSD.
I'm 74. I can't play that fast anymore.
I saw you play at the Lake Show. You can play fast. You kick ass.
I can't. Yeah. I can. But, you know, when you get sober, you start all over again. And I had to learn how to play in front of people sober. I wasn't sure I could.
Well, I saw you say in an interview in Australia, like, you know, one of the reasons you're doing, and I won't have to spend a lot of time on your drug past, whatever, but like you kind of don't know anything, or you think you don't know anything. You don't want the rest of the world to know you don't know anything. So you do the drugs and then you realize, well, the rest of the world doesn't know anything either. Right. So it's kind of a, And you're young. It's so much pressure. It's you're, like, I can't even imagine. I mean, I'm not giving you an out on it, but God.
Well, success is, how the hell do you handle success?
So you're saying when you're playing at Mach 4 at 22, at 74, you got to find a way to be true to that song, but not try to play it like you're 22 and on coke and Camel Lights.
Yeah. I got to get back to that mindset. Which you were saying, which is a little pissed off, a little attitude. Hey, I'm fucking 20 and I got big balls and listen to this.
Because this gets back to how you manipulate the instrument based on your mood and your intent, right? So you can
in a three-piece band,
you're
all in a three-piece band.
Yeah.
You know, everybody plays lead.
Yep.
And so I have discovered that, I can do it. I've been going in my studio and playing our live album really loud and playing really loud to it. And I can keep up with it now.
Nice.
But I got to put in an hour a day, man.
All right.
And Jimmy is in Ohio in his barn. He set up and he plays drums like all day.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't rehearse that stuff.
Yeah.
I can't sit in a chair and rehearse Jamie Gates. I got to be up to speed.
Yeah.
And we all do. So that playing like balls to the wall for 5 minutes is a piece of cake.
Yes. You got to condition yourself. Well, listen, I am going to put you on the spot. I got to have you back on. There's so much about the creative process that I want to talk to you about, but we're going to wrap this today.
Okay.
The show.
Let me just say Vets Aid, and we'll visit this again.
Yes, Vets Aid.
Before Vets Aid. 2020. November 13th, vetsaid.org. And let's talk about this some more.
Yes,
and you got me going. I'm sorry.
No, this is what I want. I want to talk to artists about the creative process. I don't really give a crap about anything else except that, because you're a genius and it's a waste of my time and your time to not talk. I got goosebumps when you were telling me that you go in the room and it gets quiet and we'll figure it out. I got to get you back on. We got to talk some more.
Okay.
And if you come to New York or I come to LA, let's get together and,
this kind of stuff is only as good as the questions. It's all your fault. Let's do it. Thank you, man. Nice hanging out with you.
Great hanging with you. Real honor to have you on. And we'll get you back before the concert. Take care.
Bye.
All right. How amazing is that? I got to get him back on to talk more about how he makes music. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. That was Joe Walsh. Keep an eye out. Keep your safe. Don't throw oranges on the street. And, follow me on social media. I got a lot of stuff we're posting there, @PaulMercurio. And we will see you next week, everybody. Thanks.